The following presentation was produced by St. Joseph Communications.
It's a joy for me to share with you my story of how I became to be one, Catholic, and then two, a Roman Catholic priest, because I wish I had the picture here to show you. It's usually my lead off. It shows me with very long hair, and that's basically what I'm going to show is how I got from that to where I am today, wearing a Roman collar. It's amazing. God's mercy, all through Mary, through the church, just totally changed my life. And just to get into it, because I know we don't have tons of time, it's awesome to be back in California. You know, the last time I was in California, I was in shackles and chains, literally. I was a bad boy. And, you know, a lot of people look at me and they think, no, come on. I mean, you're a halfway decent looking guy. You probably grew up Catholic. You became a priest. No, you didn't do all those things that you were just saying. I'm going to tell you things that are probably going to shock the daylights out of you that I did in my life. And it still shocks me. I cannot believe almost that I'm one alive and that I'm a Roman Catholic priest. It is amazing. So I'll go back to the beginning. And I know you're probably thinking, oh no, don't tell me your life story, Father. But I kind of have to tell you just in pieces so that you understand where I'm coming from. Because believe me, I should be dead. I was born in 1972 to two, I call them hillbilly parents. They were from West Virginia. And when I say hillbilly, I mean it. I'm just not talking about, you know, like Father's just saying something to make a statement. No, they were raw hillbillies from the backwoods, just simple, simple people. Good people, but they were very young. My mother was only 17 and she was inexperienced in life and she didn't have much exposure to a lot of things about life. And she, you know, married a man who was just a few years older than she was. And they went together, very young, to Michigan to work. My dad was got a job at like Ford Motor Company or something like that. And neither one of them were Christian, weren't baptized and didn't know anything really about religion, didn't have anything to do with it. And that's what I was born into. And of course, I didn't know that when I was born, but I wasn't baptized, and I had no religious training whatsoever. Nothing, nada, zip, zil. And my dad, who was, you know, like I said, pure hillbilly, you know, he goes to Michigan to a big, you know, city, Detroit, and he starts, you know, drinking and doing all that crazy stuff and, you know, riding motorcycles, and he's got a new car from the factory and all that, womanizing and the whole thing, and he's just not a good example of what it means to be a father. And my mother, you know, couldn't stand that, so they separated when I was only just a couple years old. And of course, I don't remember any of those things, but I wouldn't see my biological father again until I was 18. And a lot would happen between those years, a lot. My mother and I moved back to West Virginia, and we were living on my grandfather's farm. I mean, way out in the sticks. To get to the nearest town took about a 40-minute drive just through woods and dirt roads and all that. They lived way back there. And I lived there, just simple life. And then my mother met a man that she had known before, and they married. They got married. He wasn't a Christian, nothing to do with religion whatsoever. And he was a womanizer, you know, a drunkard, and all that stuff. And that's the example that I had as a young boy, you know, really young, of manhood. I thought, you know, this is the glory of what it means to be a father and what it means to be a man. And I wanted to pattern myself off of that because that's all that I knew. Well, you know, that's not good. But I had no one to correct me, no one to tell me that it wasn't good or whatever. As a matter of fact, my mom, because this guy was a, you know, just a loser, she had to join the military and leave me with him while she went off to boot camp in Florida. And, you know, that was like for a long time. And I'm with this guy, and he's out womanizing, drinking, and coming home and, you know, neglecting me, not doing anything with me, and I'm kind of on my own. I'm just a little kid. And that's the example that I had. When she comes back, they get their first duty station. She's in the Navy, and they moved out of West Virginia to Norfolk, Virginia. And, you know, a big military place there. Well, we get there, and their marriage falls apart, and they divorce. That was my second dad. And then my mom meets a military officer. And, you know, they start dating and all that kind of stuff. And at first, I didn't like him at all. I thought to myself, you know, this guy's a little different from all the other guys. He kind of has some class. You know, he's an officer and a gentleman. And I'm like, no, that's not the kind of guy that I've had. You know, that wasn't the kind of, the example of my grandfather wasn't the greatest. My uncle wasn't the greatest. The two dads that I'd had so far weren't the greatest, but I liked it. They got what they wanted, when they wanted it, and how they wanted it. And that's what I wanted. I said, well, I'm a young man growing up to be, you know, a man. I want to live like they lived, not like this guy. I didn't care for him at first. Well, they fell in love and all that. And then they got married, my third dad, and he adopted me. That's how I have his last name, Calloway. I had three last names. And then finally I ended up with this one, which was the final one, Calloway, Donald Calloway. And so he brought something into my mom's life and my life, and they had a son, my half-brother Matthew, something into our lives that was completely new, although it didn't make a difference, and that was Christianity. He was Episcopalian, but it wasn't devout. He didn't really care. And I was baptized when I was 10 years old, when they married and had the son, simply as a formality, because his parents in Asheville, North Carolina, said, you have them baptized, pretty much. Just get them baptized. And so what they did. And I tell people, you know, I'm one of those few people that like remember their baptism because I was 10, but all I remember were the jelly-filled donuts. That's it. I don't remember anything about it, nothing. All I remember was going outside afterwards and stuffing my face on jelly-filled donuts. That was it. It was a valid baptism, but it meant nothing. We never went to church again, never saw the inside of a church, even the Episcopalian church. We just never went. And then my life at that point, you would think that would, you know, change everything. Well, it didn't, because we didn't live it. It didn't mean anything to us. Obviously, the grace was there. It was a valid baptism, but nothing. We never went to church, not even at Christmas or Easter. And so we started to move a lot. Because my dad, and I'll call him dad because he is, I love this man dearly now. We started to move every 2.5 to 3 years all around the world. And our first move was here to California. We moved first to Santee, down around San Diego. And that's where my life started to take a serious turn. Because as a young boy, and I was about 12 at that time, Southern California was the place to be. I mean, I loved it. I thought to myself, man, the beach is just right over there. I was going all the time. I was at that age where girls were no longer, you know, icky. I thought, wow, you know, they look pretty nice. You know, and MTV was coming of age in the early 80s and all this new fresh stuff that I thought was really cool. I got into the music, I got into all that stuff, and I was loving it, man. I mean, to me, Southern California was paradise. And then quickly, very quickly, we moved within like a year up to, actually close to here, San Pedro. And I was young, I loved it. We were actually closer to the beach and it was beautiful. And there, you know, the whole military scene there, I loved it. And I started getting involved with the wrong crowd, even at that age, when I was 13. I, you know, started smoking marijuana when I was 13, started drinking, and just hanging out with the wrong crowd, foul mouth, all that kind of stuff. Everything that I saw being done on MTV was what I wanted to do. And so I started, you know, living that, or wanting to live it. And my parents had no control over me whatsoever. They had no religion. They had no moral system. They couldn't tell me when to come home, what to do, what not to do. And if they tried, I would just look them right in the eye and say, who are you to tell me that I can't do what I want to do? Yeah, sure, I'm your son, and I'm not of age yet so I can leave and be on my own. And folks, I'm only like 13. And I was just in your face. Get out of my face. And you, who are you to think you're my dad? You're the third dad I've had. You know, get out of my face. And they couldn't stop me. I was just bad. And that's where it kind of started. My dad comes home after we've been living, you know, here for about a year and a half. He comes home and he says to me words that just rocked my foundation. Everything that I had thought life was about, you know, Southern California, I thought it was paradise. I didn't believe in anything outside of myself, the beach and girls and music, you know, wine, women, and song, even at that early age. He came home and just took it all away with one statement. Guess what? He said. I was like, what? I mean, I'm thinking to myself, where can we possibly move that's going to be better? I mean, it just doesn't get any better. He said, we're going to move to Japan. I was like, no. You're going to move to Japan. I'm staying right here. I don't do Japan. You know, and he was just kind of like, what are you talking about? And I was like, no, you don't understand. I don't do that. I don't go to foreign countries like that, and I don't live there. This is everything here. How could you dare take me out of this? All my friends are here. All the things I've come to love. I was stupid, and I'm thinking, do they have girls in Japan? You know, I was like, I don't know. You know, I was really dumb, and I thought that if I moved to Japan, I'd have to eat fish and ride a bike. You know, I just didn't know. I thought everything would be taken away. So I rebelled, and I was like, I tried to find a way to go back and live in West Virginia with relatives, or to go to Asheville, North Carolina, and live with his family. I just did not want to go to Japan. Well, you know, what am I going to do? You know, I'm like 13 going on 14. You got to go. So I said to myself, within me, I said, fine. You're going to take me out of my paradise? You watch what happens when we get to Japan. You want to see a fallen angel? You're going to taste it. You're going to feel it every day of your stinking life, because I am going to let you know my rebellion. You're going to feel it within your soul. And that's what I did. We went to Japan from day one. I just started rebelling. I didn't even go to school on the first day we got there. I skipped, went off, and just, you know, started doing my own thing. Went immediately to the wrong crowd. Looked for the people that were, you know, wearing the Ozzy Osbourne shirts and the Led Zeppelin and all that stuff. And I just immediately went to them and said, feed me. You know, I want it. I want everything you've got, because I'm tired of everybody changing the environment on me and changing the rules when they themselves don't have no foundation and they know nothing. If this is all there is to life, I want my piece of the pie. I want it now, and I don't care when I die or how. Give it to me. And so I started getting involved, you know, with girls. And I'm not talking about, you know, pure relationships. I'm not going to go in depth on that, but, you know, imagine. Drinking a lot, and I'm not talking about, you know, little Budweisers. I'm talking about hard stuff. Hard liquor in Japan. Japan is different from over here. Over there, you know, we have Coke machines outside of a 7-Eleven or something you put your money in. Well, over there, that's an alcohol machine. And if you're tall enough to put your yen in, you're good to go. And if it ain't on, plug it in. The socket's outside. It's simple as that. They breed alcoholism over there. And I went all for it. My friends and I, we just started going out all the time, just getting wasted. And then I got introduced to drugs, to heroin, and I started doing that. And everything I could get my hands on, I started doing. Just pretty much stopped going to school. And when I would go, I wasn't there for any other reason than, you know, for girls. I wasn't there to learn anything, please. You know, I didn't care about education. It meant nothing to me. And so I was just doing my thing. And I came to the point where I just said, you know, this is all I want in life. Just to satisfy my senses. Be that through wine, women, or song, just going to discotheques and all that kind of stuff over there in Japan. I said, so be it, enough of this, and I ran away. Me and a friend of mine, another military dependent, a boy whose father was in the military, we ran away on the main island of Honshu in Japan. You know, you don't do that. You know, when you don't speak the language, every word I knew in Japanese was the foul stuff. You know, I could say good morning, good afternoon, you know, where's the bathroom, but every other word out of my mouth was foul, you know, and we just took off. We know we had no money. We had no way to live. We had friends out there in the Japanese community. So we had to, you know, basically get by. So in order to do that, we started a life of crime. And I mean crime. Felonies. Stealing cars, stealing mopeds, stealing huge amounts of money. All over the place, just from one place to the next. And we had to constantly stay on the move. Because, you know, when you're Caucasian and you have brown hair, it stands out. You know, in Japan, the little Caucasian boy seen running from the scene of the crime, it's kind of obvious who did it, you know? You just have to constantly be on the move. And we would go from one place to the next, and we've constantly felt like we were being watched, because this stuff was in the papers. And just constantly on the run. And not looking back, not caring about my mom, she was good as dead. My dad, please. My brother, I loved him, but, you know, no. It's just, every time I thought about him, it bugged me, and what little conscience I had, so I didn't think about him. Yeah, I just went on living my life. Got involved with more girls. Then finally it got to the point where my friend and I got involved with the Yakuza, the Japanese mafia. And we started doing little jobs for them here and there at these, you know, I don't know what they, like casino type things over there. And I was right on the point, and I'm not kidding. In the Yakuza, when you're initiated in, you get the top half of your pinky cut off. That's kind of the sign for it. I was right on the verge of having that done, my friend and I. And you know, thank the Lord, the turn of events, something would radically happen that wouldn't happen. And that would basically be that I got caught in Japan. I was gone for almost 2 months. And I mean, I was committing some serious stuff. I was causing an international scene. Our governments were, you know, looking, tracking me down. They were in dialogue. What are we going to do when we find him? If we find him alive. And what they had to do to find me, to capture me, was on this one particular military base, Atsugi, was where my parents were living. They had to tap the phone lines to the military installation. Because I was calling my buddies, you know, telling them, hey man, we just robbed this other store. We got drum sets, guitars, we got everything you need, man. And just come and get it. And we'll meet you at such and such a train station. We got all this money, just thousands and thousands of dollars in yen. And we'll just have a good time. We'll go to discotheque. I'll introduce you to, you know, Yuki and all these girls. It was sick. And they tapped the phone lines and they caught me and my friend. Well, you know, during that whole time of my just wandering around Japan, the main island, something was going on with my mom that I didn't know, and I wouldn't have even cared had I known. She broke. Can you imagine? A mom, a mother's heart, just crushed. Is he alive? The only time she knew that I was alive was when they got a report that there was another crime by a Caucasian boy. That gave her hope. He's still alive. Okay, he's still committing crime, but he's alive. You know, and she was just broke, crushed, maternal stuff just dying because of me. Now, my mother is almost full-blooded Italian. She's an Italian hillbilly. It's Lucita Bianco is her name. It's amazing she wasn't Catholic, okay? When my great-grandparents came over from southern Italy, they didn't really, like, bring the faith. They just kind of left it in Italy, I guess. So when she broke down, she had a friend, a Filipino lady. You know, to my dying day, I'm going to love Filipino ladies because they have done so much for my family. It's just unbelievable. These women are pillars. She went and talked to this Filipino lady, and she told her problems and what she was going through. And this Filipino lady said, you need to talk to a Catholic priest, period. That's what you need to do. That's the answer. And my mom was just, she tried everything. She went, and she went to the military chaplain, and she talked to a Catholic priest. And he told her about the Catholic Church, about the sacraments, about St. Augustine and St. Monica. You know, and just about everything, about the Blessed Mother, Our Lady of Sorrows, all the Rosary, the Eucharist, the whole thing. She loved it. I mean, it was just in her blood, you know, Italian blood. She fell in love with Catholicism. Now, I didn't know that, and I didn't care. And when they, right before they caught me, they actually told my mother, the government, they said, look, when we find him, in whatever state, dead or alive, you got to go back to the United States and prepare to receive him. You know, what are we going to do when we find him? You got to go back. You have to leave the country of Japan without your son, not knowing where he is or even if he's alive, and prepare a place to live. And you know, she did. My mom had to leave Japan without her 15-year-old son. Can you imagine? I can't. I mean, I'm just thinking to myself, my mom is a saint. I mean, it's just unbelievable what I put that woman through. She left, crushed and broke, but with hope of what she came to know, Catholicism. So she and my brother left the country. I didn't care. It wouldn't have mattered. So eventually, about 2 weeks after that, that's when they caught me. And I was violent. I was just a violent, foul, perverse, sick young boy. If you were within spitting range, I'd spit right in your face. If there were the military police officers, I'd take swings. These are huge dudes, man. And I'm just taking swings, kicking, fighting, foul mouth, the whole thing. I was so bad that they put me in the jail, in the military, you know, thing there. And when I got out, asked to use the restroom, I just took off. And I stayed gone for a day because immediately when I ran, they closed all the gates to the military base and they did a whole lockdown of the whole installation. And I couldn't jump the fence, you know, there's barbed wire on top and all that. So I hid in a sewer on the military base for that day and eventually they caught me. I was kind of glad they did. Actually, I was in a bunch of, you know, a sewer. So, you know, they got me. They had to shackle me, literally, and they had to handcuff me at my feet to a military police officer, and then on the other leg to a chair that I was sitting in because I was so bad. They had even thought about duct taping my mouth because, I mean, if I could get saliva and you were close enough, man, you're going to be spit on. And so they said, they made an arrangement with the Japanese government, because I was wanted. But I was young, I wasn't a citizen of that country, and I hadn't killed anybody, but I'd done some pretty serious crime, major felonies. They said, look, you just get him out. Get him out of the country and we won't prosecute, and you put him in some kind of institution, lock him up when you go back to your country. Just get him out. And literally, in my passport, in Japanese, they stamp something to the effect of rejected. Literally, when I got my passport changed about 8 years ago, that was what was still in there. And you know, and I would go up to Japanese people and say, what does that say? You know, I want to know what that says. And they'd say, I've never seen that before. What happened? And it was basically something to the effect of, you know, kicked out. And they had to fly me out. And because I was so bad, they didn't know what I would do. They handcuffed me to the plane. They thought, this kid might jump. We don't know what this kid's going to do. I was so bad. And you know, they were right. They were smart to do that because I was out of my mind. I don't know what I would have done. So we get back to LAX. That's the last time I was in California. It was in 1988 when I was in shackles and chains. And I forgot to say, we came through Honolulu, and that was a trip. Here I am, a 15-year-old boy in shackles and chains, walking down through Honolulu Airport, and all these people are looking at me like, honey, what the heck did that kid do? You know, and I'm just, you know, I look funky, my hair's really long and all that stuff. And so then we come here, and the military police officers, there were two that had to escort me with my father back to the United States. And they said to me, now, we're in the United States. You didn't commit anything here. We can't prosecute you, but we have an agreement that you're going to go into an institution and get some help. Do you promise when we unhandcuff you to go with your dad to see your mom, who's in Pennsylvania, and to go into this institution? I was like, oh yeah, you know, sweet, you know, sure. Well, you know, I had prime time opportunity to run, and I had friends still in Southern California. I could have called them up and, you know, just gone about doing what I wanted to do. For some reason, I didn't. I didn't do that, and I went with my dad, and we flew to Pennsylvania, and, you know, we got out the airport, and there's my mom with my brother. And my mom, you know, she's running towards me as a mom, only a mom can do, and she's just all affection and love and tenderness and compassion, just motherly stuff, man, all over me. And I'm like, she's, you know, Donnie, I love you, I love you. I look her right in the eye. I hate your guts. I hate you. Because to me, it was all about me. You know, they had taken me again, I thought, from my paradise. They'd done it twice in Southern California, and then they'd taken me from Japan. And I thought, that's it. You know, why? I don't even need California now. You know, I found a new paradise, and I got exposed to different drugs. I thought it was great. So, you know, it just rocked my foundation. And I meant it when I said I hated her. And then she just cried. She just cried, man. Tears flowing down. You know, and it didn't faze me at all. Even the tears of a mother falling on her cheeks, it didn't faze me at all. I was stone cold dead. And so I went to my first rehab, reluctantly, but I went. It was in Altoona, Pennsylvania. Didn't do a thing. I was there for about 6 weeks. I ran away while I was in it. They caught me. And I'd used drugs while I was in it. Didn't do a thing. Where there's a will, there's a way. Well, I got out and I started the same just cycle of death that I had left, and worse. Because things that I hadn't been exposed to in Japan, I'm back in good old US of A, man. And the language is the same. As a matter of fact, you know, I was familiar with so much, and it was like, oh yeah, now I'm back. Now watch what I do. I started doing things you just cannot imagine. I got involved with crack, heroin, cocaine, LSD, mushrooms, uppers, downers, everything. If I could smoke it, snort it, or drink it, I would. And I started doing that stuff every day. Every day. I didn't have an identity. I walked around just like this. Amen. Amen. What's up, man? I was gone. I was toast. I was fried. I mean, I was doing so many hallucinogenic drugs, you have to up that stuff. You know, people that went to those Grateful Dead shows, you know, all those people were stoned, man. And I mean, gone. And I was doing that stuff all the time. All the time. Now, what I didn't really know, because I was out and about, going to school, please. I was out doing my own thing. What I didn't know is that my mom, my dad, and my brother were in the process of becoming Catholic. It didn't mean anything to me. I remember hearing a couple things about it. I thought they were joining a cult. I thought, you people are weird, man. You people are just weird. I thought, okay, whatever, you know, you do your thing, I'll do mine, but just stay out of my life. If I need a place to stay and, you know, something to eat, just let me in every now and then. And, you know, that's basically the relationship that I had with my parents. It got to the point where I ended up literally following the Grateful Dead, you know, because they didn't fully break up until, you know, Jerry Garcia died in about 95. I was following them all up and down the East Coast, and, you know, Volkswagen buses just going from show to show. No idea how I would get to some places. I was just gone. My identity was just shot. And I was just a sick, sick kid. I ended up having like kind of a rock bottom experience. I had many. And I went to live back with my parents. And they took me. They took me in. And, you know, so merciful, so good. And I saw a change in them. They were, my mom wasn't freaking out on me, you know, screaming and all that. She would reprove me and all that kind of stuff. But she was different. And I never chalked it up to religion. I just thought, nah, she's getting old. You know, she's calming down now. She's, you know, she'll come around. She'll see I'm not so bad. Well, you know, I'm stupid. I'm so dumb that I can make the connection between them coming to know Jesus Christ. And I never knew who he was, really. But, you know, that's what she had come to know, who she had come to know. And it was a visible difference. And, you know, I'm living there, and she would tell me things about church every now and then. I'd be like, Mom, hey, no, don't go there. Because, you know, Donnie don't do religion, you know. And she would put things under my pillow, like a miraculous medal. I didn't know what that was. I didn't even know how to, you know, I'd try to read it, but it was so small print. And I'd be like, Mary conceived? What the heck is that stuff, man? And I'd fling it. I had no idea, you know, sin, what the heck is that? You know, I had no idea what that stuff was. And I'd find them in my jacket pocket, or I'd find a prayer card, you know, to St. Joseph or St. Michael. And I'd be like, tear it up, just garbage. What the heck is this stuff? You know, just chuck it. Meant nothing to me. And eventually, I had this kind of rock bottom experience again where I'd done so many drugs that I was on the point of death. I mean, I was doing inhuman amounts of crack and cocaine and LSD and mushrooms and all that. And I entered another rehab, this one somewhat of my own free will. I was in a bad state. And it was in Philadelphia. Didn't do a thing. I went in and we started telling war stories. You did what, man? No way, man. I did this, man. And we just started going on about all that stuff, and it was just sick, you know. And it didn't do a thing. And we're glorifying all that, you know, just junk in our garbage in our life. And the day I got out, I went right back into the same stuff. You know, my parents held out hope, but it just didn't work. And I went right back into that same stuff. It got to the point where I just became so bad that I left home again, and I'm wandering around. And at this time, I had turned 18, so I'm 18 years old. Well, I wake up one day. In Louisiana. I don't know how I got there. I have no idea. All I know was I was in Pennsylvania one day. It was about a day and a half. I'm in Louisiana. You got me. I'm down there with a friend of mine. So obviously we came down together in a car. So we find ourselves in Louisiana and we got to make things work. We got nothing. We got nothing but, you know, Bob Marley CDs and, you know, Grateful Dead stuff and a guitar with a couple strings broke and a car that's practically stolen. You know, that's it. And so somehow, I got a job working on the Mississippi River on a tugboat, tying off barges. The guy driving the tugboat was doing crack, cocaine. And here I am, you know, high as a kite, and I'm tying off barges. And I mean, with shoe knots. I didn't know how to do all that stuff. I didn't know what I was doing. I got these huge cables, and I'm tying shoe knots, man. And I'm so thankful to God that somebody didn't get killed because of my stupidity. That they didn't break loose and smash into a bridge or something. That stuff happens. It has happened. I thank God that it didn't happen because of my stupidity. Well, I got fired from that job, obviously. That didn't work. And then, you know, I was doing my life, my sinful life. I got busted and thrown in jail down there for what I consider this day to just be shameful. I got caught stealing at a Piggly Wiggly store down there. I don't know if you know what those are. And I got thrown in jail. It was a misdemeanor charge. And then my friend, he got me out, and we fled the state, so I was technically wanted on a fare to appear in court. And so we were running, and we were scared. And we were just running. All across, you know, the country, we'd go into gas stations, fuel up with gas, and then take off. That's the only way we could, you know, get from place to place. And it came to the point where I said, you know, I got family in West Virginia. I got some, you know, hillbilly relatives. Let's just go out, man, and live in the woods. Let's just get away from all this stuff. Let's just go back to nature, you know. So we went out there and we had an axe, a shotgun, a car battery for the music. You got to have music, you know. And we had a lot of macaroni and cheese and a lot of marijuana. And we lived there for about 2 months, just like that. We had a tarp for the rain, you know. And that was all we did. We just listened to, you know, Grateful Dead, Led Zeppelin, and the Eagles, and all that stuff, and just, you know, doing what we were doing. Well, that didn't work. You know, ran out of macaroni and cheese and other things. So we came out, and I went back to live with my parents. My friend got thrown in jail, and I never saw him since. I was so into myself, I didn't care. He had got me out in Louisiana, but once he got busted, I had to heck with him. You know, that was my mentality. It was all about me, all about me. And then my parents, when I moved back in with them, they informed me shortly after that, hey, you know, we're gonna move again. Your dad's got a new duty station. And we're gonna move back to Norfolk, Virginia, where this whole thing had kind of started, you know, 10 years ago. And they were like, do you wanna move with us? I was like, yeah, I do. So I ripped off all my friends and we moved. So I go down there and I get right involved with the same things, get fired from a couple jobs. At that point, my hair is just real long. I got a Grateful Dead tattoo that I barely remember getting. It's still there, the Steal Your Face tattoo. And I got, you know, earrings and all that stuff. And I'm just, you know, bring it on. What's next? Well, there came a point in 1992 where after having died so many times, you know, and going to all these dead shows, and you know, your brain is just fried. And I said to myself, you know, I'm going to die. It's just a matter of time. And my friends are calling me up one night, and they're like, dude, man, come on, let's go out. Well, I got this, what you need, man? And what's her name's waiting for you? So just come on out, we'll have a good time. And I said to them, no, man, I can't do it. And they were like, what? What do you mean you can't do it? Come on. I was like, no, you don't understand, man. Just not tonight, man. I just can't do it. I can't do it. I didn't even know what I was saying. That was like, not me. And I just was like, okay, fine, man. I was like, I've been to jails. I've been to institutions. The next thing is death. You know, that's what they say, jails, institutions, and then death. And I knew it was coming. And I'm not talking that I was being religious. I wasn't saying, you know, I'm going to die and go to hell. I didn't believe in hell. I was just, I'm going to die and fade away. So if I'm going to do that, if I'm going to die, well then, you know, with what little heart I have left, let me just die at home so my mom doesn't have to worry. You know, like I'm some kind of hero in charity, you know? And I said, this is it. You know, forget about it. I'm checking out tonight somehow. And I just felt something was coming. And I didn't put a label on it, you know, Jesus or, you know, something was going to happen to me. No, it was, I knew, game over. Life is just, it's not worth it. And I'm just going to check out. And I don't know how that was going to happen. I didn't even know what I was talking about. So I sat in my room and it's getting late and I'm getting bored. And I'm thinking, yeah, heck, man. My buds are out there with this stuff, man, and what's her name's waiting for me? I'm thinking, no, don't do it, don't do it. So I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, occupy the mind. And so I'm like, okay, National Geographic, let's go look at some monkeys, some pictures of Amazonia or something, just to, you know, focus so that, you know, I don't do something stupid. So I go out into the hallway, and I want a National Geographic. I want to look at some pictures. So I go out there, and there's nothing like that. There's like, you know, Edgar Allan Poe, some dude, you know, and Encyclopedia Britannica's, and my dad's got some military books, and I'm like, no, no. I'm like, come on. And I spot this one book. I couldn't even pronounce the binding. I was looked at it, and I was like, The Queen of Peace Visits Medjoo. What the heck is that? So I pulled it out. I thought it was maybe a foreign language book. I had no idea what this is. So I took it out, and I was like, I saw a cross on the cover and some little kids. And I was like, aha, probably something about that Jesus fellow, about Christianity. And I thought to myself, you know, they call me weird, man. I was like, I'm going to read this. I'm going to check this out and see what cult my parents have joined. I thought they were waiting for the spaceship to come, you know, one of them deals. I had no idea. I was raw. So I went into my room with that book, and I didn't want anybody to see me reading it. And my mom was actually the only one home at that time. My dad, interestingly enough, was out on a Mediterranean cruise for 9 months. He wasn't even home. So I went into my room, I opened up the book to the middle, because at that point I still kind of only wanted to look at pictures. I looked at some of the pictures and I didn't know what to make of them. I saw these little kids, you know, kneeling down with their hands folded like this, which I thought was probably a gesture of prayer. And I was like, what the heck is this? I don't get it. So I read the little caption below the pictures, and it said, you know, the children are now seeing the Blessed Virgin Mary. Blessed? Virgin? Who the heck is a virgin? Mary? Never heard of her. Never heard of her. I have a clue who this woman was. Not a clue. And I looked at the pictures, and I saw a couple more crosses, and I was like, yeah, let's check this out, man, because this is weird. And I thought to myself, what are they into? I started going through that book, and just the message of that woman, this Virgin Mary, blew me away. I mean, it blew me away. And I was making my way through language. I was like, Eucharist. I didn't know how to pronounce this stuff. Holy Communion. I never heard the words before. You know, Rosary? I didn't know. And I'm making my way through. And as I kept reading this stuff, I'll tell you what. I ate that book. I consumed that book like it was life. I mean, I was just going from page, page, page. And it was objective truth. I had never heard this stuff before. Heaven? Hell? Sin? God? God? What the heck is God? I had no idea. No concept of anything outside of the tangible. If I could touch it, that's all I knew. And this woman was saying that she was the mother of Jesus Christ, the mother of God. She was saying Jesus was God, and that the Catholic Church was his church, and that we had to pray and fast. I didn't even know what that was. We had to fast. I'm like, the heck is that? Fast. Never heard of the word. Just the concepts didn't never cross my mind in my whole life. And she's bringing all this stuff across and saying, turn to God while there's still time. Repent. Go to the sacraments and all this stuff. I bought it. Hook, line, and sinker. Like a shark to meat. I just, bam! Yes, that's it. And I closed that book. I read the whole book. And that book is about that thick. And you know, I was so dumb. The guy who wrote it, you know, he had FR before his name. I didn't know what that was. You know, I thought, the heck is that, man? You know, I thought they made a mistake. It's supposed to be a D or something, you know, a doctor or something. And then his initials were AA. I'm thinking, cool, he's Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, it was his community name, you know? I closed that book at about 3:30 in the morning. And I knew that my life would never be the same. That woman, the Virgin Mary, had taken my heart. I mean, I had sought the perfect love and the feminine since I was like 12. I just sought it in the wrong way. And I had sought meaning in life. And, you know, everything I wanted to be eternal. I was seeking paradise. I'd never been shown truth, objective truth. Everyone had always told me, hey, whatever floats your boat, man. You know, whatever gets you by. I'm okay, you're okay. And everybody just kind of tingled my ears. And they never told me saving truth. I closed that book at 3:30 in the morning. I said, that's it. Period. That is it. Jesus is God. The Catholic Church is the Catholic Church. Mary is the mother of God. Jesus is, you know, the Son of God, all that stuff. I just knew it. I went to my mom at about 5:30 in the morning when she got up. And, you know, she's coming downstairs, sleepy-eyed and all that kind of stuff. And I'm in the hallway, man, just, at, you know, right there. And I'm like, Mom. She's like, what? I said, Mom, I got to talk to a man. I couldn't get it out. And she's like, Donnie, what? And I'm like, Mom, I got to talk to a man. I'm like, come on, you know, work with me, Mom. And she's like, Donnie, what are you trying to tell me? And I said, Mom, I have to talk to a Catholic priest, okay? And she's like, yeah, right. And I'm like, no, Mom, you don't understand. I know that I've tried everything before, but I'm serious. She's like, what are you talking about? I said, Mom, I read a book last night. She's like, what book? And I had it, and I showed it to her, and I was like, I read this book. And she was like, what? You read that book? And I was like, Mom, I consumed the book. I ate that book, man. And she didn't say a word, man. She went right to the phone. She's punching numbers. Father, yeah, good morning. You got to talk to my son. And it's talking like 6 o'clock in the morning. And these priests, God bless them, they're like, how about 8 o'clock? You know, how about 8:30? Let me wake up. You know, let me get together here. And God bless them, you know. And she's kind of like, no. You don't understand. You got to talk to him now, right now, because this is it. You know, you don't know my son. And it wasn't working out. They're all saying, you know, call back or come later in the morning. So I said to her when she was in between the phone calls, Mom, isn't there one of those Catholic, what do you call them, churches or something? Isn't there one like right inside the military base and right inside the main gate? And she was like, yes, Donnie, run. And I did, man. I busted out that door. I was like lightning. And, you know, the Marines, this was a military installation, and they're doing their morning, you know, cadence, they're marching and all the hood. And here I am, long hair, flowing in the wind, hippie, funky clothes, just skipping, man, just giving it all I got to get to that church. I get there, and you know, it's amazing. I looked at it. I didn't go in because I thought, no, I die. If I go in there, it's all over. Guillotine comes down, it's game over, you know? So I see the sign. You know what the name of that little chapel was? And it is still. Our Lady of Victory. And I just looked at it and I was like, oh yeah. And then I went into the where all the chaplains are. You know, you got them all in there, the military. They got a representative from just about everything under the sun in there. And I went in there and I just let it all out, man. I bust open the door. I'm like, Catholic priest. You know, and people in there in their military uniforms, and they're just like, whoa, can we help you? And I'm totally out of place for a military base. I mean, they're thinking he jumped the fence and, you know, we need to call the MPs. I could see it in their eyes. And I would blame them, you know. And I'm like, I want to just say to them, look, okay, get beyond that. I know I look like a freakazoid man from another planet. Where's the Catholic priest, man? And so they were like, okay, calm down. We'll get him, okay? Just, you know, be calm. And so they go get him, and he comes out, and I didn't know what a Catholic priest looked like. I had no idea. So he comes out, and he looks just like a dude, you know? I'm like, okay. And he comes out in a military uniform, because the chaplains, that's what they wear. And so he comes over to me, and he's, like, checking me out. He's like, can I help you? And I'm like, yeah, man, are you like the, what do you call it, fodder? You know, the fodder? And he's like, yeah. And I said, well, we got to talk, because I got something to tell you. And so we go into his office, and I blew that dude away, man. I mean, he didn't know what was coming at him. You know, and I'm just laying it out. Father, I did this, man. I did that, man. Father, I'm just so shameful, but I did it, man. As a matter of fact, I did it a couple times, you know. And I was just unloading on him. And I was going a million miles an hour. I was just dumping on him. I just blew him away. And he said, whoa, whoa, whoa. He's like, okay, look, I'm going to go into the church, the chapel, and I'm going to say Mass. I'm like, well, whatever. You know, you're going to say what? I'm like, I didn't get it. You know, I was like, you're going to go in there and like celebrate air or something? I don't get him. And he was like, okay, look, just go into the church, sit in the back, okay? Just sit in the back. And, you know, he had that look on his face like, you know, don't steal anything. And so I was like, great. I was like, you mean you really are willing to talk to me after this Mass thing? You don't want to like kick me out and call the police on me and all that kind of stuff? He was like, no, you go in there and we'll talk after Mass. So I was like, great. So I went out, and I get to the chaplain door, you know, Our Lady of Victory. And I'm just looking at the door, man. I'm just looking at the doorknob. And I'm like, phew. You know, and I thought, as soon as I come in contact with anything having to do with God, like a door of a church, you know, no, I'm crushed. That's what I thought if I thought anything of God. It was just, you know, popping you out of existence. So I made my way through that door real slow. I opened up that door, and I stepped through. Ooh. You know, like I was getting into a hot bath. I was just like, I got in, and I was like, oh, man, I'm in. And then I saw these ladies sitting there, and I was like, oh, gosh, you know. And so I just go right to the back. I sit in the back, and I'm kind of looking around, and I hear these ladies saying something. Filipino ladies. And they just keep saying the same thing over and over, man. I was like, what are they doing? I just never heard or seen anything like that in my life. And I'm trying to listen to what they're saying, you know, and they're saying it kind of fast and with an accent. And I'm like, you know, I'm like, what the heck are they saying? And then this lady from the very front, she turns around and she has what I think is like a necklace, you know, and she kind of holds it out to me. And I'm like, what the heck? And she goes, young man, do you want to pray the next decade? I'm in the back, and I'm like, no. That's what I said to her. She gave me a look like a deer in headlights, man. She's like, what? And I was like, no. And she was like, no, the next decade, you know? And I'm like, wait a minute. Don't you see who I am? And, you know, to me, decade means like 10 years, okay? I don't know the lingo. I didn't know what she's asking me. And then she says to me, to try to make it more like palatable, she says, you know, but it's the fourth sorrowful mystery, you know, the carrying of the cross or whatever. And I'm like, whatever, you know, and she just kind of gives me the look like, whatever, you know, she kind of gave me a whatever, and she turns back around, and they kept doing their thing. Obviously, that's the rosary, you know, and I'm just like, bizarre, man. And then this priest comes in. I know it's him because he's got the same face, but he's not dressed the same. And he comes in with what I thought, yeah, I'm dumb. He comes in dressed like a hippie to me. He comes in with vestments on, looks like a hippie garb, you know, and I'm like, sweet. You know, maybe this ain't so bad after all. Though, okay, that thing with the ladies there was kind of interesting, but maybe this is going to be kind of cool. So he comes in, and that was my first experience of a liturgy. And he's doing stuff with his arms, you know, and all the stuff I'd seen on TV. And I was like, oh, wow, you know, what's going on? And these ladies are standing and sitting all in unison, all at the same time. And they're saying the exact same thing at the same time. And as I watch this, I'm just in awe. And then time stopped. The priest bent over, and he had, you know, a little white circle. I didn't know what it was, you know. And he bent over and he said, and I heard it, though it was very softly said, "Take this, all of you, and eat it. This is my body." And he raised up this little white circle. Man, you want to talk about infusion? I just looked, and within my soul, my God, I couldn't believe it. I was like, everything was coming to me that I'd read about the Eucharist, the Blessed Sacrament, the Holy Communion, you know, that Mary was saying in that book. I knew, man. And I was just like, oh my goodness. You got to be kidding me. I was like, this is the meaning of time, of history. I was like, this is it. And then he took the chalice and he said, you know, take this, all of you, and drink from it. This is my blood, the blood of the new and everlasting covenant. And he elevated the chalice. Oh, man. I was like, where does it go from here, man? I was like, this is just getting better. I can't believe this. I just had an infusion of just, bam, knowledge. God. God. And I was just worshiping. I was adoring with all my being, man. Every fiber cell in my body was focused. And then I saw something that just blew my mind. These Filipino ladies got up and received him. What? You mean God is right there and you can go up there and you can receive him? You can consume love? God? I couldn't believe that God was so in love with them and me that he was willing to do something like that. Man, you don't know what passion, fire, and zeal was in me, and I wasn't completely there yet. I wanted to bum rush the altar, man. I want him. Father, I want him. But I knew I couldn't do that. I knew that would be wrong, although I wanted to. I was like, this is just unbelievable. Everything I wanted in life, it's right there. Right there. And so after Mass, I went to the priest. I overwhelmed that dude again totally. That poor priest. I was just going a mile an hour talking. I was like, okay, so it's Jesus in the Eucharist. That's how you pronounce it, right? Eucharist. And okay, I believe it, man. That's him. That's him. That's him, right? Okay, great. Fine. Next. Let's go on to the next thing. Okay, Blessed Virgin Mary, Mother of God. Okay, I buy it. Fine. Catholic Church, one Holy Apostolic Catholic. Okay, fine. Peter, okay, fine. I got no problem with that. I'll obey him for the rest of my life. That's no problem. And I go through this whole pattern. I was just like, Catholicism, you know, just instantly. Bam! And that priest, man, he didn't know what was going on. And he said, whoa, look, I don't know how you're doing this, but I'm going to give you some stuff. Come back tomorrow and we'll keep talking. That was great. That he wanted to talk to me again. I was thrilled to death. He gave me three things. A crucifix, a picture of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, and a picture of John Paul II. And the funny thing was, I didn't even know who he was, you know. He gives me this picture of this, you know, cute looking guy. And I'm like, okay, you know, whoever he is. I know his picture wasn't in that book, you know, so I didn't know who he was. And so I go home, and I ran home, man. I'm skipping home at like, you know, 7 in the morning, 7:30 something. I mean, I am happy. I am just like a little kid. And I get home, I go right into my room, I hang up these items, and my mom is just sitting there, you know, sipping coffee or whatever. She didn't ask me how I'm doing, how'd it go. She didn't say nothing. I went right into my room, hung these things up, went to the kitchen, got 5 to 7 big, huge, black, hefty bags. Went in my room, and all the things that I had in there was either drug paraphernalia hidden in the floorboards and all this stuff, and all my, you know, all that stuff, half of the stuff in my room was stolen, all my, you know, tapes and all that stuff. I chucked it. Put it into huge black hefty bags and just chucked it. I got rid of almost everything in my room. All I left in my room were a couple items of clothing, literally. I got rid of blankets, stuff I didn't even have to throw. Any attachment whatsoever, goodbye, time to go. And I didn't even throw it in the trash. I opened the front door and just heaved them right in the front yard. I ain't got time, you know, to go out and find a trash can. This is serious. This is now. And I went into my room, shut the door. My mom is just sitting there drinking coffee. And I know she's just like, yes, yes, man, this is it. Just do it, you know. So I go into my room. And I'm thinking, oh man, okay, now what? Now what do I do? Now what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? And I'm thinking, man, it's a long time till tomorrow. So I'm like, okay, pray. Duh. So I'm like, but how? How? What the heck? What is prayer? I was like, you know, I didn't quite get what those ladies were doing. Okay, the book, man, go to the book. So I get the book, I open it up to the pictures. And so I just mimic them. Fake it till you make it. So I knelt down on my knees. I pulled out the dresser drawer like it was a little kneeler, you know, and I rested my hands on the kneeler. And I was like, okay, that's, you know, I don't need that. I closed the book and I just knelt there. And I was like, okay. You know, and I'm like, you know, what do I do? You know, come on, poof, you know, appear or whatever, you know. I didn't know I had to say something. I didn't know what to do. I'm just sitting there, and I mean, I'm straining. I'm like, you know, and it wasn't doing anything. I was like, man. So what I didn't realize was that I had hung that image of the Sacred Heart of Jesus right over my dresser drawer. So, you know, when I wasn't like, you know, straining to pray, waiting for something to happen, I opened my eyes. And I'm sitting there, and as I looked at that image, I broke. I snapped like a twig. I looked at that heart and the gesture of blessing and the fire above the heart and the cross and the open wound. I can't tell you how I cried. I cried like a little kid. And it wasn't wailing, you know, and freaking out. I'm talking just, I repented, man. I was convicted of all my sinfulness, all my perversion, all my just wretchedness of all the things that I had done came upon me as a grace, just washing me clean. My tears were flowing so profusely that the little clothes that I had in that dresser drawer, they were soaking wet, soaking wet. You could have drained them things in a bucket and filled it. And I knelt there for a long time, the good part of a day. I didn't even move. I just sat there, I just knelt there, crying my eyes out. And as I did, it just went, I went through a stage of just remembering, and the tears would come. Remembering, the tears would come. Remembering, the tears would come. Just repentance, contrition, sorrow. And all that was cleansing, and it was also transforming. You know, I don't know how to explain this. Those tears became tears of joy, tears of, I was almost like bubbling with almost laughter towards the end of it. I was like, I'm being transformed. I mean, I found it, man. Or rather, he's found me. And I'll never be the same. And it was almost as though I'd been given back my childhood. I'd been given back what it meant to be a human being. I'd been given a second chance of life. And I got up from hours of being there. And I said to myself, I'm just going to lay down and I'm just going to go to sleep. I felt so refreshed from that experience. I lay down on the couch. I didn't even have a bed. And I laid down on it. And as I lay there, I was so at peace. I hadn't been at peace like that since I was a little kid. But then, all of a sudden, something happened. I can't, it's hard to put it in language, in terms. It's difficult. I left. My body just, or my soul just left. I was paralyzed. I couldn't move. I couldn't scream. I couldn't do anything like that. If I could, man, believe me, I wanted to cry out to my mom so that she would come running and shake me and get me out of it. Literally, my soul was leaving. I felt I was just going. It freaked the daylights out of me. I thought, no, in light of all that, I've just come to know what's going on. What's going on? Why can't I? I couldn't do anything. Nothing would come out. I couldn't move. It was like the universe was on top of me and I just couldn't move. And I only knew how to do one thing. The person who had shown me Jesus, the truth, I only knew how to cry out to her. And that's what I did. And with everything within me, because it wasn't vocal, it screamed. And it seemed like it just went throughout the universe. And it, in my mind, it still seems like it does today. It was so profound. A cry. I said, Mary! And it was deep. And I meant it. I meant everything. It was profound. And all of a sudden, with the force of a universe, I was slammed back into my body, there on the couch. And you know, I heard something. I've never heard it since. The most beautiful, feminine voice I have ever heard and I will ever hear said this, "Donnie, I'm so happy." And that was it. No one called me Donnie except my mom. I knew who that was. And I tell you, I rested like I was 4 years old in the arms of my mom. I slept that night snug, tightly wrapped in her mantle. Peace had come to my soul. It was unbelievable. I got up the next day, a new life, a new everything. I went back to that priest and we started talking. That began the whole process of becoming Catholic. And I did. RCIA was boring. It was like, come on, people, put it in fifth, man. You know, why are we just kind of sitting there in first? Let's go. Give me some meat, man. And so that just convicted me all the more. Boy, you got to be a saint. This is a time for no mediocrity, no lukewarmness. The church needs holy men, and you got to be one of them. God has given you an unbelievable grace. You should be dead in another place that's very warm, and you just need to be holy. And so, man, I started just living in church. I started going to church every day, all day. I'd just sit there and listen. I'd make the Stations of the Cross until I wore myself out. I'd just keep doing it. Just do it. Until I got so tired, I'd lay down on the pew and take a nap. Then I'd get up and do it again. I just kept doing it. I'd get money from my mom. I'd buy roses and put them at Our Lady's statue. And I'd just sit at her feet for hours. What do you want me to do? You've shown me the real Jesus. What do you want me to do? Guide me. Cover me with your mantle so that I don't get deceived. Because, you know, people were trying to, in different ways, people that I knew, trying to teach me about a different Jesus. You know, and the lost gospels. And all that kind of stuff. And there was this angel craze back then. And, you know, everybody's talking about angels. And I heard about a lot of other private revelations talking about reincarnation, all this kind of stuff. And I was like, nope, wrong. And I was learning about all these new age stuff. And I was just like, I knew. The mother's mantle was over me, protecting me from the garbage and the wrong Jesus. The one that people make up in their minds to affirm their own sinful actions and ways of life. And I came to know the real one, the only one. And I fell so in love with him. And I became Catholic within 9 months. And you know what's so amazing? My dad, remember now, he's out at sea. He comes back about 3 weeks before I'm to be confirmed. Roman Catholic. You just don't know, man. He comes back and, you know, I greet him when he comes back. We're at the pier, you know. And, you know, I don't have my long hair anymore. I'm cleaned up. I'm looking human. And I embrace him, and my mom had been just exchanging letters with him and stuff, but it wouldn't prepare him for the real thing. I mean, you know, and so he comes, and I'm just like, Dad, man, I love you, man. I just can't tell you, like, you know, and he just saw, you know, that it was real. This stuff was real. And so about three weeks later, I was confirmed. And at my confirmation, he looked at me right in front of the whole congregation, and he said to me, look at me right in the eye, and he said, "Welcome home, son." I broke again. I was just like, golly, man, this just doesn't get better. I felt like a spoiled kid. God just mercified me. I mean, he just totally, and he continues to just mercify me. I don't know why. I ain't no better than anybody else. I got friends who are dead, who have died from drug overdoses and from other things. I got friends here in California. One who's roaming the streets is a homeless guy now in Southern California. I don't know where he is. Every now and then I hear from him in a phone call because his dad gives him money. I got friends who are just in institutions, locked up, and all that. Why did God choose me? I don't know. But I'll tell you why I believe. Because of you. God loves you so much. And, you know, all these people are praying, Lord, give us priests, man. Give us priests according to your heart. Give us Orthodox priests, men of God. You know, and Lord, bring them. You know, the little old ladies with the blue hair praying in the church, those are the pillars. And God's going to be faithful to them. I mean, look what he did to me. I had to study for 10 years. I had to learn everything over him. I didn't even know how to add. I had to go through everything. I had to go to community college, then to college, then seminary. I was blessed beyond belief. Talk about being spoiled. I went to the best, Franciscan University. I went there and I studied under Scott Hahn. I took every class the man taught. I studied under Mark Miravalle and all that. You know, I just soaked it up. Just like, bring it on, bring it on. You know, I loved it. I just ate it up. And then I went to my seminary, Dominican House of Studies in Washington, D.C., solid. I just loved it, just ate it up. And, you know, went through that whole process and then got ordained up in Stockbridge at the Shrine of Divine Mercy, how appropriate. And, you know, God loves you so much that he's going to raise up literally bums off the street to be your next pastor. He'll do it. He did it. Because he loves you so much, he's going to be faithful. He knows the long suffering that you've gone through. And believe me, I know you're going through it. But my friends, my whole story is not to glorify all the past and the reason I've told you all that, but to give you hope. There is a whole new generation of priests coming. There is rank upon rank of great men coming. I tell you, I just got out of the seminary last year. These guys are no nonsense. They're not playing games. My generation, we want truth. Don't give me your 60s and 70s feel good, touch good theology. I'm tired of it. I don't want it. I reject it. The generation that is coming is going to put it out there clear, with conviction, clarity, and boldness, apostolic preaching, and yet with great compassion, mercy, and love, because they themselves are wounded healers. I am wounded as all get out. Do I still struggle? Yeah. For like the first 5 years of my conversion, it was a honeymoon, man. God just put a sucker in my mouth and said, "Aren't I sweet?" And I was like, "Yeah, you are." It was romance in my spiritual life. And then about 5 years into it, he just kind of took it out and said, "Now, a question. Do you love me or do you love the sucker, the sweetness?" And I was like, that's a good question. I'm liking this. You know, please don't take it away. And he did. And all the, you know, glorious moments in prayer and all that kind of stuff went, and I entered into dryness and darkness and struggle. Because why? Because the ways that you sin are the ways that you're going to be purified. We're not dogs. We're sons and daughters of God. And he's going to transform us from within. So, with all my passions and desires, because I'm still a man, thank God, you know, I'm not an angel. And he's saying, I'm going to allow you to go back through the fire so that you can cooperate with my grace and become my son. That's what I want to happen to you. And I'm grateful that he does it. I'm grateful that he doesn't treat me like a dog and just cover me with grace, but transforms me from within. I'd have it no other way. It wouldn't be right to have it another way. God wouldn't be Father if he did it another way. Do I struggle? Oh, yeah. Do I go to confession a lot? No, yeah. I'm weak. But see, the Father knows. He's planned it in. He knows we're going to stumble and fall. You know, without confession, I'd be up the crick. You know, I'm constantly going through spiritual battle. I'm a hunted man. The devil wants me. You don't know how bad. He gets me in his sights every now and then, and I can feel the trigger. I can hear it. And I just, Mother Mary just kicks me out of the way. Just get down. Bam. A shot, you know. It happens all the time. Just here and there. From within, from without. All the time. You know, I tell people that confession is a spiritual diaper change. It is. God is Father. And he'll clean you up when you make a mess of things. And because he's so good, he's not just going to send you back out into the world with, you know, nothing. He gives you the reassurance, look, I know it's hard. I know it's struggled. I tell you don't sin again. But I know you're weak and I know you struggle. You know, come back. Come back. Tell me. I want to know everything. I want to hear it all. Don't turn away. Come to the mercy. I thank God that I've been called to a community that promotes divine mercy more than anybody in the world. We promote it more than they do in Poland. We do. We have the copyrights to Faustina's Diary and all that. It's amazing. And Our Lady, the masterpiece of divine mercy, Our Lady. My friends, my message for you, especially those of you who are mothers, grandmothers, if you're suffering for, you know, from the times, which you are, I guarantee if I asked for a hand count, they'd all go up. You have someone in, probably in your family, a husband, a wife, a son, a daughter, a grandchild, a brother, a sister, who is far from the truth. God will bless your prayers and your sacrifices. Just continue to cooperate with him. Hold out hope. My mom held out hope when there was no hope left. And look what happened. She became Catholic. Her son, this punk, became a Roman Catholic priest. And what these hands have done, you know what they do now? I absolve thee. Consecration. It's amazing what God can do when someone just surrenders. And my friends, pray. Pray, pray for the priests. Mother Mary, that's our formator, teaching us how to be men and priests. It takes a woman always in the life of a man. The woman in the life of a priest is the Virgin Mary. Every priest has to have that. And that's what this new generation has. Devotion, tenderness, affection, great love for the Blessed Virgin Mary. They have a Eucharistic life. They love the Eucharist. Want to be before Him night and day. They want to wear a Roman collar. Many of them even want to wear a cassock. I usually wear a cassock. That's normally all that I wear. When I travel, it's hard. It gets wrinkled. I look like, you know, I'm a hobo in a thing. I'd be wearing it now, but it always gets wrinkled in the luggage. I wore it on the plane one time. It was funny as all get out. People didn't know what to think. Like, Darth Vader's on the plane. It looked kind of interesting. Pray for us, my friends. God loves you so much, and He will be faithful because He is Father. Trust Him at all times, in the midst of all kinds of doubts, sufferings, and all that. He is faithful, and you will see it. The bride of Christ will be completely transfigured in days to come, and she will be more glorious, more beautiful in the sight of the world than she's ever been. Ever. Because all that has happened is nothing compared to what is to come. It's written. It will be done.
We hope you've enjoyed this presentation produced by St. Joseph Communications. St. Joseph Communications offers a wide variety of audio, video, and print materials on the topics of scripture study, apologetics, spirituality, family life, and much more. To browse the many fine products available, please visit our website at saintjoe.com. That's SAINTJOE.com. The copyright for this recording is held by St. Joseph Communications. The presentation may not be broadcast, reproduced, or redistributed in any manner or form without the express written consent of St. Joseph Communications. Thank you for listening, and may God richly bless you and your family.